Hello and welcome to the Mezlis, the Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I am Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service. Central Asia has never been an easy spot for independent journalists. It has recently got even worse. As we speak, head of Kazakhstan's Journalists Union, Seyit Ghazi Mateyev, is in jail, who is arrested this week. Also in detention is a Turkmen journalist, Sapar Mehmet Nepeskulyev, whose fate remains unknown since his detention 6 months ago. In the meantime, many websites, including those of Araf Yarili's language service sites, remain blocked in Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Tajikistan. Unfortunately, authorities are the ones responsible for most of these actions. These are unprecedented days for journalists, even in Central Asian standard. Today, in the Majlis, we aim to discuss how is this increasing pressure felt on the ground, what is leading to this wave of intimidations, what are the possible ultimate goals behind it. To discuss the subject, in the studio here in Prague, I have Ludmila Kozlovska, who is the president of Open Dialogue Foundation. Welcome, Ludmila, to the show.
Hello, everyone.
Also, Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, called Kishlak Awazi. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
From New York, Muzaffar Suleimanov, a Central Asia researcher at Committee to Protect Journalists, joining us. Muzaffar, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you, Mohammed.
From London, Cathy Morris, head of Europe in Central Asia at Media Freedom Advocacy Group, Article 19, is joining us. Cathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi, everybody.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Majlis. It's been some time since we have been talking about increased intimidation of journalists in Central Asia. Let's begin the discussion with the recent developments in Kazakhstan of detention of head of the National Press Club of Kazakhstan, Seyit Ghazi Mateyev. What do we know about this case? Let's start with you, Ludmila, as a Kazakhstan.
First of all, from my perspective, all accusations who was actually accused, Seyit Ghazi Mateyev, it's only the next step how Kazakhstan tries to mopping up media society, media sphere, in order to be able to make, you know, very common and very, very, for them, comfortable way transition of the power. So all accusations which are contained also usual in these cases, financial accusation or tax accusation, they are quite normal and quite usual for Kazakhstan. They did it before many times in the past, since 2005. Then they recognized also media as so-called extremists when they covered tragedy in journalism and repression. And now we see that even the latest one platform, which actually was provided by Mateyev for the independent activist and also journalist, also is trying to be closed or even to given to other hands to control this media sphere.
Do we know anything other than accusation of tax evasion? I mean, what is there anything, any details available of that?
Actually, there is no clear information what is going on. We only understood from the information from our colleagues, from Adil Soz, that actually everybody tried to understand what is the real ground. They tried to say that it's mistake was to taking him arrest. And nowadays, what we know, the latest information is that today is going on the hearing in the court to decide will he arrested and for how long.
Bruce, Mateyev's case is not the first one in Kazakhstan. Earlier, we had a situation with Respublika newspaper, right? I mean, now they are publishing under a different name. Then also blockage of several articles were the case. The question is, Kazakhstan used to be relatively one of the better environment for journalists to work in. What is happening there? What is changing?
They've slowly managed to either co-opt the leading periodicals that were critical of the government, and I'll mention Karavan in this case. In their mid-1990s, Karavan did have a lot of articles that criticized the government, but it came under new ownership, and the new ownership was much more kind, I'll say, to the officials in the government. But there are things, there are other journals, and you mentioned Respublika, and Respublika did not take that path and refused to be quiet and also refused to come under new ownership. or sell out. So they've had any number of problems, and they've chased the journalists that they haven't chased out of the country through threats, and I mean serious intimidation. You know, they had one of the editors woke up and found that there was a decapitated dog out in front of her house, and then she got a phone call, you know, a threatening phone call, not just threatening her, but her daughter, who was still a minor, a teenager at the time, and she had to leave the country, and they've been plagued with these kind of threats and this kind of harassment for quite a while now. They changed their name to Nakonuni, but as we see, the same harassment still goes on. Those journalists also didn't want to do pro-government stories, and now they're up on charges, which of course never have anything to do with slander or libel or anything like that. They always find another reason to do it, like Mateev is up for tax evasion. Now these journalists, at least one of them, is up for narcotics possession. So.
Kathy, what is your reading of what is happening in Kazakhstan these days, especially involving the journalists?
I think it's a really difficult one to see, because it seems in many ways that they are becoming more and more paranoid. Because if you take the case, for example, of Respublika, who then became Nakonunia, they don't have a huge circulation, and it's difficult to see what real threat they could pose to a situation in Kazakhstan where the ruling party essentially has no real credible opposition to it. And so attempts to silence it before the elections, to me, seems in many ways, related partly to revenge, but also this just absolute intolerance for any voice that is not 100% towing the government line. And I think that the threshold of tolerance is definitely getting lower and lower. And possibly that's related to increased kind of government paranoia, concerns, but it's hard to say.
Muzaffar, is there anything you want to add?
Well, I agree with all the speakers on the phone regarding the paranoia and all the repressions that has been going on in Kazakhstan against the media since the Jan Alzen events, when they started really cracking down against the journalists who broke the news and who reported on the crackdown against the clashes in that region between the police and the protesters. And the case of Respublika was emblematic, where the authorities showed that they will not tolerate any kind of criticism, and they, as everybody knows now, they pretty much declared any media which carries the name Respublika banned in Kazakhstan, which is a nonsense, which is an absolute nonsense. You have it is a country which was just recently a chairman of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. Mm-hmm. I think it was in 2010, and then you see such a crackdown which goes absolutely against any OSCE values. In the case of Mateev, I'm really shocked and surprised to see the allegations that they brought against him, saying the Anti-Corruption Bureau said that he cashed couple of millions of US dollars, and actually in that statement, which his son was also pointing at, the anti-corruption agency declared him declared Saeed Kazim Mateev committing a grave crime, which means that the state agency is taking upon itself powers of the court.
Right.
And yeah, it is a paranoia. It is probably, I don't want to speculate, but there might be some kind of power struggle between those who seek to regain power after the current leader is gone.
Obviously, we are going to, you know, come to the subject of why it is happening, what is happening these days in Kazakhstan and in rest of the Central Asia. But now I have to draw your attention on Turkmenistan. This perhaps might be even more depressing situation among all of the Central Asian countries. One of our reporters, Safar Mehmet Nepeskuliyev, is in jail, hopefully alive. We don't know. Hopefully alive. We haven't heard anything of about his fate, nor we can access to his family members from last several months. Also, one of our journalists, fled Turkmenistan, not being able to face the continued and increasing intimidation by the authorities. And three of our other journalists were also forced to step down over the last several months. If that was not enough, recently authorities are also cracking down against satellite antennas. Actually, that is one of the only source of information for people inside of the country. So Turkmenistan hasn't been an easy case all the way since its independence, but it seems things are dramatically changing for worse in recent days. The dreams of openness, which started with Berdimuhamedov coming to power, is proving fruitless. Who wants to take question, Lyudmila? Although you are focused on Kazakhstan.
Yes, I'm focused on Kazakhstan, but I can say that actually Kazakhstan loves to show a case of Turkmenistan to show how they are democratic. You know, they always need to have the worst situation in the region to show how they are strong. And of course, I think it is about position of EU and US. Are they care about? Are they really mentioning it and brought it on the table when they discuss the issue with the Turkmenian authorities? What they are going to do? Do they have strategy? Because you cannot frozen the situation and allow them to do what they want, because afterwards there will be, you know, other Syria, or we don't know what we can expect when you don't control, when you don't have information, when you don't have any kind of information to observe situation in the ground.
Right. Obviously, there is an international link to what's happening there, but also locally, why it is happening what it is happening today in Turkmenistan, Bruce?
The government is very anxious to control all means of information. They want a specific portrayal of the country, both inside for public consumption and outside the country, happy place, prosperous, those kind of things. So that there is only, as far as the Turkmen government is concerned, there is one narrative to describe Turkmenistan and no other ways of looking at the country. Our reporter, Nepis Kuliyev, who you mentioned, he was there simply, as I understand, to take pictures of some of the luxurious homes that government officials live in. Now that shows you what level
they're on. And this is something government authorities want to show outside the world. Right?
And all of a sudden, this is a dangerous thing where, you know, we know that hard times are coming economically, and simply by photographing that officials in the government live in these kind of opulent conditions is suddenly a threat to undermining the state, because the regular people who are having a harder time making ends meet every month don't want to see a picture of the government official in a gated community with a fountain and a swimming pool in his yard and things like that. So,
on Turkmenistan, it's not only that authorities are cracking down against the local journalists who are the ones who are providing news from inside of the country to outside, otherwise just a black box there. But also, as just mentioned, also, taking down all possible tools through which people can get information, like we were talking about this yesterday, Bruce. Like today, our website and lots of other websites, Facebook is blocked, and YouTube, Twitter, whatever you think of, all these platforms through which people might access to some independent information. Yes, certainly there is an effort, but are they succeeding? Muzaffar, do you want to comment on that?
It's difficult to say for me sitting in New York if it's possible for someone in Turkmenistan to get access to information about the events either inside of the country or what's going on outside of the country. But that is a big problem as well. The thing is, authorities don't understand that information, at some level, they probably think that when the people have access to information, they will probably be challenging the authorities. Yes, that is a given. They will be challenging. It is the right of any person to challenge the authorities, to question their policies. But at the same time, access to information implies that you have access to, any business resources that you need to employ. If Turkmenistan wants to bring more international visitors and to spur its tourism, how will the information be reaching in and out of the country? This is the problem. The economy is not going to be developing. And there is also a big threat of terrorism. Like, yes, the authorities in Central Asia are now, and we see the reports that there are people, the residents from Central Asia, who are joining ISIS and other groups. So it means that those terrorist organizations, they go about somehow all those restrictions imposed by the authorities on the access to information, and people do receive information about the groups, and the groups have access to the people. Yeah, and what's the problematic here is when you don't have independent journalists who can write also about the threats of terrorism, who can also describe what ISIS is and challenge the government and then challenge the group, those journalists are not able to write it, to write anything about it. Like if you take the cases, like for example, in the past of BBC journalist who was jailed in Tajikistan a few years ago. He was jailed because he was writing about, I think, Hizbut Tahrir. Mm. And if you write anything about Hizbut Tahrir in Uzbekistan, in Tajikistan, you will be jailed. If you are a journalist who are trying to simply go on an interview, do your journalist work to interview the person and to try to challenge the group which is posing threat to the region.
Right.
Like I'm not talking about any particular group. I'm just talking about in general.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You need the journalists to go and do that job. But unfortunately, journalists who are doing this stuff, who can actually help the state to prevent the rise of radicalism in the region,
right.
They jail themselves on those allegations that, well, you belong to the group because you're writing about the group.
Yeah, you mentioned Muzaffar Tajikistan. That's exactly the another problematic area in Central Asia. Now, there is a general crackdown against any dissident voice, including potential opposition or presumed opposition members. But media also taking huge hit in that country. I hear my source in Tajikistan telling me that journalists are even scared of offending authorities, therefore imposing unprecedented self-censorship so that they avoid unwanted attention. How much of this pressure is uniquely directed on media, Cathy?
Well, I think talking about media in Tajikistan, one of the biggest concerns there is that so much of the pressure, as I understand, on journalists and on independent media, of which there's very, very little left, is indirect. So it's not something that you can publicly call to, but it's the indirect investigations. It's pressure put and people made to feel unsafe, made to feel that they cannot report. And so it's hard to call out exactly what it is, but it has this chilling effect in which people are totally unable to speak out. And I think the point that you raised there about journalists being afraid of insulting public officials, Tajikistan, while it did partially decriminalize defamation, it has retained criminal defamation charges, well, insult of the president or defamation of the president and insult of public officials. And these are really, really used as a means to prevent anybody speaking out about actions of the government or the president in the public interest. And so it's a really effective tool to silence independent media. And I mean, it goes without saying that, well, international human rights law and the courts have repeatedly ruled that defamation should never be criminal because it's too open to abuse by powerful authorities, such as we see in Tajikistan. And also, civil defamation should be fine, but it's clearly being abused. And so you have this legislative environment that adds into a kind of broader sense of pressure, and it's making it incredibly difficult for anybody to speak out on any matter of public interest.
It's very difficult to understand what the Tajik authorities are trying to achieve. Tajikistan, I believe, recently also denied accreditation to some of the Russian journalists, which supposedly working for the state, which is friendly to Tajikistan's president. So it's not pressure only independent journalists being pressured there, but also a journalist like that, who anyone, in fact, who is not in line with Rahmon's language. Where the country is going, Bruce?
Well, you're referring, of course, to Sputnik. Their journalists did not get accreditation. That's a very unique case, because we know, since these places were part of the former Soviet Union, that the people in the country, even to this day, tend to believe what they hear broadcast by Russian news much easier than our own organization, for instance, because they've seen it on Vremya, Rossiya 24, something like that. They'll assume that Russia is telling them more or less the truth. So having people from Sputnik inside the country at a time when the government's going through huge upheavals. It's not just the economy, but I mean, we have these power consolidation moves by Rahman and his inner circle. And the last thing in the world the Tajik government wants is for this stuff to be aired on Russian television, where some of their own, where some of their population can not only see it, but can understand what's happening. And all we have to do is remember what happened to Bakiyev in Kyrgyzstan in 2010, where Russian media was instrumental in getting him run out of office and getting the Kyrgyz people to rise up against, you know, the elected president. So, you know, it's a nightmare scenario for Central Asian leaders. And as much as they don't like the stuff we broadcast, I think they're even more terrified of what the Russian media might broadcast about them.
And even Kyrgyzstan, like I was just referring to it as a, you know, once known as an island of democracy in Central Asia, there were several incidents involving journalists being, you know, beaten or harassed. And also there was a discussion about how the media landscape is being influenced by Moscow in the country. Muzaffar, what is happening in Kyrgyzstan these days in terms of media?
Well, in terms of media, I want to go back to the case of 2010 of Azimjan Askarov and to remind the listeners that Kyrgyzstan, which used to be an island of democracy, a truly island of democracy in Central Asia.
Is it still?
It's the only country in the region which has been jailed, has sentenced a journalist and human rights activist to life in jail. This is ongoing, and CPJ is going to be repeating it on every forums, and I'm using this moment to remind everyone that Kyrgyzstan is still, it's the only country in the former Soviet Union which has sentenced the journalist to life in prison and denied him a fair trial. And well, since the events of 2010, we know for sure that the Uzbek language media has never regained ground. The independent editors and media owners have been forced out of the country under the threat of prosecution and sentenced in absentia. And we see the ongoing attacks against the journalists. Like, there was a case recently where a local journalist was, I think, sentenced to a huge fine for writing something about the president. And the prosecutor's office filed charges on behalf of the president. And the country wants, again, wants to be still called to be an island of democracy. No, it's not at all. Mm-hmm. And you have journalists being beaten up, like Turat Akimov, who says he was assaulted over the weekend. Yeah, as we can see in the entire region, press freedom conditions in the entire region are downgrading, and just the repressions, attacks are still ongoing, and it's shocking that the authorities are cracking down against the messengers,
right,
against those who actually point out at the problems that have to be dealt with.
Right.
In Kyrgyzstan, authorities forgot that the revolution against Bakiyev started after the media, after he cracked down against the media and decided to silence them when they started reporting against the protests in the region. I think they were related to raise of electricity tariffs. The people went angry, and they went and they overthrew him.
Right.
And what's going on right now? They're repeating the same mistakes as they did like just five years ago.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Muzaffar. We can't escape Uzbekistan, but also don't know what to say about that. You know, the situation on the ground. It's been years since the Bureau of our Uzbek Service being shut down virtually. No independent media exist in the country. No independent journalists are operating websites. Lots of other websites, including our Uzbek Service website, remains blocked. So there is really nothing left to be cracked down in the country. So there are many other things we could be talking about, but the interesting question is, what is causing to this setback, and what is the ultimate goal of those behind this mob? So let's take a short break here. When we come back, we will continue discussion on this direction. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Majlis. Today we are discussing increasing pressure on free media in Central Asia and its possible reasons. To discuss the subject here in the studio, I have Ludmila Kozlowska, who is the president of Open Dialogue Foundation, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia Bloc, Kishlak Awazi. Joining us from New York is Muzaffar Suleimanov, Central Asia researcher at the Committee to Protect Journalists. From London, Kathy Morris, Europe and Central Asia head at Article 19. I am Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So now, intimidation of journalists are not new in Central Asia. From our case, I remember a day when one of our reporters in Turkmenistan would tell me that he has 7 SIM cards. The reason being is that whenever he would make a call, one SIM card is gone. And when he would receive a SIM call from us, another SIM card is gone. So those were the days like several years ago before the current president was in power. But what we are facing currently in the country is not comparable to what was under Niyazov's period. Let's talk, Bruce, start with you, Bruce, here. I'm trying to understand this. Yes, Turkmenistan has always been difficult, but it is getting even more difficult. Why it is happening?
It changes from state to state. If you're talking about Turkmenistan specifically, it's because, in my opinion, that they're having a lot of problems. You know, it all comes back to this economic issue and stuff. Turkmenistan's supposed to be, the leadership has always promised this is going to be a country that's constantly going to be advancing. The economic situation is going to be great. I mean, you know, they kind of forgot. Niyazov started out when he, right after independence, by saying everyone would own a Mercedes and they would all be living in great houses. Well, they kind of forgot about that part of it. But generally, it's that idea of, like, you know, we're a prosperous state, but the people are all going to be prosperous. And lately, we've seen that is not true. And in fact, it's less true every day, practically, in Turkmenistan now. So the last thing in the world you want is to someone, you know, the Turkmen government's built this big sandcastle or house of cards or something. Now, once someone is able to report something inside the country about some, basically a lie that the Turkmen government's told or said, you know, you've heard this, but actually look at what you see in front of your face and isn't this the case, then everything that the Turkmen government's been saying is called into question in the minds of the people. So a journalist is a dangerous person to have, because if they can prove that the Turkmen government has been wrong about one thing, people start to think maybe there's more things that the Turkmen government's been wrong about and not telling them about. Now, real briefly, across the board, of course, they're all having economic problems, but we also have to remember there's succession questions that are coming up, and Muzaffar hit on this a few minutes ago. And certainly in Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan, the leaders are probably not long for this world. So now you have a whole inner circle of people who are thinking about their own futures and trying to position themselves to possibly take over the role of leader, or at least keep themselves up at the top. And again, journalists are someone they don't want poking around. They don't want someone to report on what they're doing to try to advance their own interests with an eye toward what happens after the succession.
Right. Ludmila, coming back to you about the increasing pressure against media in Kazakhstan, in terms of reasoning, is there anything different than Turkmenistan, for instance?
Maybe because actually a lot of us already said about why actually nowadays it's very important for Kazakhstan to mopping up media society and information, because there is election and they want also to make very peaceful for them transit of the power. And at the same time, there was a huge leak of information, so-called Kazakh WikiLeaks, which was analyzed by independent journalists, especially journalists of Respublika and Nakanuni. And actually, it shows nowadays, and it hurts more for Kazakh authority, because before it was a little bit even to be proud that you can buy 3 liters of Napoleon for price 97 and 500 euro from France and bring them to Kazakhstan without custom controls and paying taxes. But nowadays, when the crisis appears and when oil prices fall down, it very, very hurtful for people and for Kazakh authorities, because people try to ask why we cannot pay for our credits, why we don't have salaries, why you as a official have such kind of amount of money, which you cannot have officially. So, and this information, together with information how was organized huge crackdown and black PR campaign towards to civil society inside the country, but also outside the country, how enormous money was spent for lobbyists, for a lawyer's company to prosecute opponents in different countries of EU. This is information is particularly now very dangerous for Nazarbayev and his circle. First of all, for Maximov. That's why for him, the first task is to eliminate independent journalists who has this thinking and has to share the information.
Right. We have to unfortunately wrap up our discussion here, but one final question is, Muzaffar, I believe you might wish to jump in here. In the past, when a reporter would be harassed or detained, authorities would step back after criticism by the international community. But lately, such pressure also seems not helpful. Look at our reporters, for example, in Turkmenistan. We report about his detention, the unfair trial, and then the fact that the communication being cut off, and there was some protest letter by the various NGOs in Congress or some other institution, but nothing has changed in his status. In fact, I have seen the Turkmen authorities coming to international gatherings and lying them in front of them. I'm just curious, so do they don't care about the criticism anymore, Muzaffar?
I think this question is, we should be asking this question from those in power, and I wish we could speak to them. We always, CPJ and many other groups,
we do criticize. I asked this question because one of the people who would be coming out to criticize actions of those authorities are organizations like yours, for example. And the question is it not effective anymore?
We do try to engage with them, but they walled off themselves. And, well, one of the problems here, and I will have to go back to Uzbekistan, which we spoke about briefly in the first part. Uzbekistan, you have a really horrible record of human rights abuses. You have which peaked in 2005 in Andijan during the massacre when Karimov, Islam Karimov, the president, personally oversaw it, and he ordered the troops. What followed was the exodus of the of the refugees, and also a huge crackdown against the independent media. Or, as you remember, after that, all the foreign correspondents were expelled from the country. Nobody was allowed in the country. And what happened is both the EU and the US imposed sanctions. Now, 10 years later, what we have? Where are those sanctions? The sanctions are gone. Everything was lifted. And that showed that the Andijan massacre and the response of the European institutions, the US government, and those in power, those who could have held the Uzbek government responsible. Mm-hmm. Their response to the massacre showed that basically dictators can get away with everything they do.
Mm-hmm. You are saying
because
that partially,
right now you have the
partially international political community themselves is responsible for what's happening. Is it what you are saying?
I'm saying that they're not responsible. I cannot put all the blame on them. But what they're responsible is that the crackdown is still ongoing. What they're responsible for is that they still continue to shaking hands with those dictators, trying to tie their policies, and they as the U.S. government recently did, they decided to give arms back to Uzbekistan, whatever they're bringing back from Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. They decided to give it back, to give it to Uzbekistan.
Right.
If you recall the sanctions in the against the crackdown in Andijan, ban on sales of the arms, on transfer of the arms to Uzbekistan was one of the main points in the sanctions.
Right. Yeah. We really need to wrap up here. The final question to Ludmila is: so, what the international community could have done differently?
First of all, it's actually what my colleague said previously. It's concrete list of sanctions towards the person who are responsible for this repression. Mm-hmm. They all of them have properties in Europe. They love to send their child to study in university, in a very costly university, for people's money from their country. Mm-hmm. So if there is a real critic and if there is a real personal sanctions towards the responsible person, with always mentioning and showing support for person who are try to be try to act and even risking with their life doing things, doing protecting human rights, doing loud as journalists criminal cases and corruption cases. This is the only actually answer what we can do. So clear support, also financial support for the NGOs in these countries, exchanging of views with the government, with the clear messages who should be released if you want to trade with us, and to care about it. Look at this list of persons who should be released and send mission to see what is going on with them on the ground. So they have to care about all these people.
Thank you very much. Fascinating thoughts. Lyudmila Kozlovska, President of Open Dialogue Foundation. Also, Muzaffar Suleymanov, Central Asia Researcher at the Committee to Protect Journalists. Thank you very much, Muzaffar, for being with us. Kathy Morris, Europe and Central Asia Head at Article 19, and also Bruce Panier, Central Asia Editor at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you very much for being part of the discussion today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Director of the Turkmen Service, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bye-bye.